So we're going to start relatively punctually here because there's other things happening, as you know, and at 3 o'clock I have to be in the room across the way doing another kind of seminar and so on. So thank you for coming. I just want to pray and then we'll kind of kick off. So Father, we're here and we want to learn together about succession, this important topic. So just help us all to learn, to grow. Anything you want to bring to mind or have us know, we pray that even through questions and answers and presentation, there will be things imparted that are wise and helpful, that we could be responsible with leadership and planning and all kinds of things. So we ask for that in Jesus' name. Receive it. Amen.
Amen.
Great. Well, so thanks for coming along. We were just laughing. I think this is,
You have to introduce us.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. Yes. Okay. So, for the recording, hi, those listening to this. This is called Navigating Leadership Succession, helping you to plan and implement leadership transitions. And my name is Peter Bunton, and I am presenting here also with my good friend Steve Prokopchek. So the two of us will cover a few things together, and then there'll be some questions and discussion. So that's to kick us off. Thank you for coming, and it's great you're here. We're already joking, some people come in the room a bit furtively, like, if I come into this door, this room, does it mean that I'm telling people, you know, our time is coming to move on, you know? And so I think my response was, you know, you can say, well, sometime in the next 20 years or something, it's probably going to happen, you know, you don't have to be specific with the time frame. So thank you for coming along. That's great. We, towards the end, can give you a handout. Some of you, we were just saying earlier in the room, we've been putting together some notes on this topic. The goal is to make a little booklet, you know, user-friendly booklet or something. So Steve and myself and Diana Mondi have worked on this. So we're happy to give you later on what we've got, but this isn't quite the finished version, and I feel it looks a bit like a company's annual report or something. I'm sure we can, you know, jazz it up a little. But it's largely here. So probably within a couple of months, we'll have a final version that's going to be available for people. But we give you this today for sure. So we're going to try and do four things as we present and then some discussion and question. I'm going to talk a little bit about how do you know it's time to go? How do you know it's time to, if you are a leader, start planning an exit. Steve is going to talk about how transition can be healthy, some of the components of that. I'm going to pick up a little bit on, if you are a departing leader, how you can help prepare the next leader, okay, and train them and be involved with that. And then Steve will share a little bit on how to use and resource if you have an apostolic overseer of your church or, you know, one of those people who's just helping you. So we'll try and present a little bit on those four things. And of course, there are many other aspects as well. A little plug here, hopefully not self-aggrandizement, but I also have a book being published by Whitford Stock this summer on this subject as well. So I've done some academic research on this, which is not in some ways practical. It's looking at all kinds of theological implications, whether leaders reflect enough on their theology and how theological issues can come up in succession and so on. So that's another whole seminar, really, or buy the book when it comes out in a few months' time. So let's just kick off with, how do you know when it's time to go? What are some of the pointers? And we've communicated with Keith Yoder a bit on this. We've got things, and I think without too much effort, we came up with about 18 things that could be pointing the way towards it's time to go. So it's interesting. And I guess is if you start to get several of them converging, then that could be some confirmation. So I won't go through them all, but if you are a leader, how do you know when it's time to go? It could be things like this. Maybe your sense of passion for what you're doing is diminishing. Any sense of satisfaction or, you know, being stimulated by whatever it is you're leading. Is it the church, a ministry, or some, you know, the principles apply elsewhere. You know, can apply in business and jobs as well. Maybe things like you notice your physical, mental emotional energy is just fading a little bit when you do those tasks and when you're in that environment. It's just not the way it used to be for you. It's not energizing. Being more spiritual, perhaps you just sense, hey, the grace for this role is lifting. It's diminishing. I just don't seem to have that grace from God to carry on in the way I used to. Sometimes, if we're honest, our heart for the people we're overseeing or leading starts to change, and we perhaps don't have the grace, we don't have the same sense of compassion, and you know, it just kind of lifts. And we can feel a little bit guilty sometimes when that happens, yeah? We feel, well, I'm a Christian leader, I should be full of compassion and love for these people, but it's okay to recognize if that's changing. It may not be you being fleshy or selfish, it may be just a sign you've done what you need to do here and there's something else that you could be attaching yourself to. Your sense of calling is lifting. Or perhaps sometimes you just feel it's completed. I came here to do these things, you know, X number of years ago, and they've happened. The major vision I had has been completed, or a major kind of section of it, you know, period of it, phase, has fully happened, and maybe someone else carries something for the next phase in this church, this organization. So that can happen. Or you just reached major milestones. Those goals that you set for yourself personally or the church, they've happened, and that's a good thing. Do you have that grace and vision for the fresh thing, the fresh phase? And we all know things need to be changing a lot, don't they? The way we do ministry and the kinds of things we're heading towards. Perhaps you're just growing restless. Okay. Now, some of us have rather restless personalities anyway. So we have to be discerning, don't we? Because some people, they're in a role for a long time, but every couple of years they need a fresh challenge. And that's okay. So recognize, is this a normal restlessness that comes within me and who I am? And that doesn't necessarily mean I should be leaving. Or is it something more significant than that? Perhaps you start to just get interested in other things. You're thinking, you're reading, your prayer, it's more and more of that over there. You feel a little bit of a nudge to engage with that issue, or you know, just realize that's what I'm thinking about right now. It's not this role I'm in. I'm kind of imagining myself elsewhere. Now again, discernment, because we all know in leadership it can be pretty crappy at times, if I'm allowed to use that word on here. Yeah, okay. And so there are always times in leadership where we imagine we're somewhere else. Like, whoa, if I could be out of here. But of course, that's just part of dealing with pressures and stress. But there is that sense sometimes where, yeah, your thoughts are being occupied elsewhere. You have a drawing to other things. You're now reading books about that and not this here. Preparing that next series of sermons for these people. I just don't have anything anymore. This is what's on my heart. Sometimes you've just developed a very strong leadership team around you and it's really good and you think, well, this is in wonderful hands. Maybe it's time for someone else now to move to the next phase. And then, of course, we all trust God is working in our lives and the churches and ministries we lead. And sometimes you just know God is nudging you somewhere else. It can be a nudge. It often starts with a nudge. Sometimes it's really much more significant, isn't it? And again, God speaks to us differently in different seasons. And also, I think, our gifts and personalities, you know. I remember when my wife Ruth Ann and I were living in England, involved in ministry. Ruth Ann drove along one day in the car. She looked up at the clouds in the sky and she went, oh, we're going to be moving to the USA. And I look at the clouds. Now, it took 2 years, but about a year later I was thinking about it, and another year it actually happened. But that's her. She's more kind of prophetic. She just gets things from a God in a different way to me. You know, I tend to read some, you know, book that most people find boring, and then suddenly on page 89, you know, God speaks. So you know who you are and what your walk with God is, and so it's going to be different. But perhaps these are some of the principles. A few more. Sometimes I think we can even start to lack confidence in ourselves and our leadership. You know, we've done great for 10 years, but now we're just not confident anymore. Is that a sign of something? And of course, sometimes there is just burnout. There's physical exhaustion and, you know, spiritual, emotional burnout. And we really need time away. But what if that 2-month sabbatical doesn't cut it? You know, you do the things. Now, let's get some rest. Let's go and go to the mountains and pray with God and walk through the forest and whatever you need to do. But really, after that sabbatical, you're still like, I don't have the energy. I don't have the vision. Is there something deeper going on here? And of course, there can be other circumstances in life. Even family seasons sometimes tie into this, don't they? And we know, hey, the kids have just left home and something else is happening. Does it open up other possibilities for you just in your family circumstances? And I think we should pay heed in those as well. God speaks through those kinds of things. There are seasons in every area of our life. Yeah, maybe one more thing. Sometimes we just sense, I'm going through the motions here. I'm fulfilling my job description. It says you preach on Sunday. It says you pray with the sick. It says you supervise or lead the cell groups, you know. But you realize I'm doing it because it's my job. And that's what they pay me to do. But is your heart in it? Is there something else drawing you? And of course, many of those factors can coalesce and converge, so they're not, you know, just exclusive. But really, just to pay attention to those kinds of things. I'm not saying there is a sign to move, but often when some of those happen, or more of them happen, or 10 of them you realize are true for you, then what is God saying in this? Is it time? So just a few thoughts on that one. And I'll hand over to Steve right now, who talk about a healthy transition a bit further.
Thank you, Peter. All right. So it is well said, I think stated numerous times in this book that I want to tell you about, that every leader is a transitional leader. Every leader is going to go through succession. It's not, will I someday? You definitely will. So every position that we ever find ourselves in really is a temporary position, because eventually God is going to move us on. But one of the things in working with leaders who have transitioned, and I really enjoy the process. It's not cumbersome to me. I enjoy working with people who want to walk through this in a way that it's full of truth and full of transparency. Because when you're trying to hide your real feelings, that's a really hard thing to hide. Like you really can't do that. If you know, no matter what job you've had, if you know, look, this inside of me, this job's already ended. You know, you don't hide that very well. That's somehow it's going to come out. But we need to have those advisors along the way, and those persons that we're able to confide in. Proverbs 13:10 says, it tells us, where there is strife, there's pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. So healthy transitions is what kind of the piece that I want to do right now. Healthy transitions leave assumptions behind. It's good to really study about them. It's really good to read them about them. This book it's called Next: Pastoral Succession That Works. So it specifically deals with pastoral succession, but they also, as a William Vanderblum and the person who wrote this book, they have a consulting firm, so they consult with persons beyond their local churches. But when they first did this book, this is actually the second edition, but when they did the first edition, the publisher said, we don't look to sell more than a few hundreds of these because it's so specific. And they immediately sold everything they had and kept printing, and now they're in their second edition of this book. So it's really, really been excellent, and it's been helpful. And that book's probably given us tremendous insight. And anytime I've done transition with teams, I have the team order that book and read through that book because it gives such practical, very good input. And he also talks about the failures in transition. He actually mentions specific churches that didn't do it well and what happened. So that's all really helpful too. So there's always a time factor in transition, isn't there? No matter whether it's your job down at the battery factory or it's your ministry position or whatever it is, there's always a really important time factor, because healthy transitions can't be delayed to the point where everybody's totally frustrated, and they can't be too quick either. So I showed up one time internationally at a church and was there for my regular meeting, and in the first elders meeting that we had, the lead elder announced that he was done. And I'm like, oh, gosh. What? And I said, no, wait. And this was years ago, like before I even had my head around this whole thing of transition. Yeah, how do you do it? And so, and everything we tried to talk to him about, he'd say, no, I'm done. And I'm like, no, I'm done. And the elders are sitting there, they're all stunned, And so, anyways, God redeems everything, and he also redeemed that situation, and we're grateful. So this, the abruptness of that was just horrific at the same time. So timing is really important in all of this. Of course, humility in that is obviously recognized, because Proverbs 16:1-3 says, it gives us this awesome advice: to humans belong the plans of the heart, but from the Lord comes the proper answer of the tongue. All a person's ways seem pure to them, but motives are weighed by the Lord. Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and he will establish your plans. And I like that commitment to him so that he can establish the plan. So, yeah, clearly the bottom line is good transitions begin with clearly hearing the voice of the Father. Clearly hearing that for yourself, because you have to be convinced, and if you're married, your spouse has to be convinced with you. I can remember when we were in this 8 years of mission work, and we had a prophetic guy show up, and we knew him, and we loved him, and we respected him, and we knew that he was a true prophet, and he spoke very words that seemably always came about. And so he was just visiting. I don't remember why he was coming at that time, but anyways, he showed up at the door, and he showed up at where we stayed with that ministry, knocked on the door, opened the door, and he said, "Pack your bags, you're leaving." And I'm like, "Yay, God!" So I'm turning around, and I told Mary, "We're leaving," and she goes, "Oh no, we're not." I said, "But the prophet," she said, "I don't care what the prophet said." So there's timing to this, and of course, she was right. Oftentimes in our marriage, I would just reveal to you that I often carry the vision, but Mary carries the timing. And so if I carry the vision and we do it when I see it, often the timing is off. And so when we're together on it, as even Peter said, I don't read the clouds, but I love hearing the voice of God, or tea leaves or anything else. But anyways, Mary will often carry the timing. So, so one of the things that's been important in this process that we have been growing in and learning is that the succession thing started with Larry and Laverne in 2016. And a lot of time was spent with them initially to be able to get in writing what they do. Because after 40 some years, what they do is hardly even known to them without sitting down and starting to make lists. And so multiple meetings were had with them so that that those leaders could begin to write out what they do. Because these leaders who are transitioning, they have the history. They know the bylaws. They know how the eldership team was built. They know exactly where this church is at. So they're vital, and the information that they have is vital. And I would say at any point in time when you know you're transitioning, that's the time to begin to record what it is you do. Everything that you can think of that you do. Every job, every Every aspect of what you do is written down. That doesn't mean your successor is going to do all those things, but it does mean someone is going to, or things are going to fall off the plate. So they know the history. They know, they have this implicit knowledge of everything about this organization, and that is vital to the organization and the ongoing aspect of the organization, and it's vital to the incoming leaders as well. So they have the history, they know the policies, they know why decisions were made when they were made and what brought them about. They know all of that. They know, as Simon said, we went through how many major hiccups, you know, along the way. Well, him as a leader, he's so valuable, and he knows what those hiccups were, and he's able to describe them and walk the next leaders through that. Healthy transitions need a ceremony. I really like this part because it's a celebration of what has been and being able to celebrate the present leaders. One of the transitions that I was a part of a couple of years ago, one of the things that the couple did that were coming in was they held a surprise banquet, a surprise celebration for the outgoing lead elders. They put it all together, and it was extremely honoring. It was fun. It was a night of laughter. They got people there that were part of the church from years back that moved away, or prior leaders. They got all those people there. They got community leaders there, and they had certain ones be able to stand up and share what this family meant to them. And so it was all a part of celebrating them, but it was also a part of their grieving. You know, being able to let go of what has been and be able to continue to walk out the call of God in their lives. Plus, we made sure their adult children were there, and so that their adult children could also celebrate what their parents had endured for many years, you know, and had gone through themselves. And as a just total celebration. So then public installation is so much fun. That whole service has got to be centered around this transitioning that's happening, because publicly the people need to see this leader's moving on and this leader's moving in. And however you choose to express that, that's a very, very important expression at the local church level. Now, just take a minute before Peter comes back up to discuss post-succession aftercare of leaders. This is huge. Walking with the leaders post the succession piece. So all too often, as much as we hate to admit it, there's a lot of identity, a lot of our life in this position, in this thing that we've been doing. And so helping them walk away from that, helping them to grieve the losses, helping them with all of the emotions that they're going through in that season, post-succession and aftercare of those persons is so very, very important. They're going to face challenges that they didn't realize they were going to face. I'm on several succession teams for the Criters and for the incoming leaders. And when I have opportunity one-on-one with some of these persons, I try to reveal to them that for leaders, they're going to feel feelings they haven't felt for decades. They're going to go through loss that they didn't know they were going to go through. I mean, everything can be projected and talked about, but you can also say to yourself, that won't be me. Yeah, but there are leaders in this grief that say, I'm done, now what? Especially if they're going into kind of like a retirement phase, you know, or moving away from the ministry. I'm done, now what? And or a voice that whispers to them, I'm no longer useful. Or what am I good for? So that whole piece. And then you have the spouse, male or female, whoever the spouse is, they got tons of feeling as well, because they walked through this whole thing for all these years. And then you have the children or the adult children, and many of them are still there. They've walked through this all of these years. So you have all of this aftercare for all of these persons that's so extremely, extremely important. Now, I don't want to minimize the fact that we tend to focus on the one who's transitioning, but it's also true of the one who's coming in. There has to be a lot of aftercare for that person coming in, because they're feeling a lot of stuff. They're replacing someone who's like older than them, wiser than them, has done this for years, and here I am, the new person, and I'm asking these people to accept. There's all kind of pastoral care needed for that person as well. So I don't want to in any way, you know, say that that's any less than. So it really works with both sides, the outgoing and the coming in. So Peter, sorry, I think I took a minute or two of your time.
That's great. We're all fluid and flexible here. I'll just pick up on one quick thing Steve said before I move on a little bit. That's this whole sense of loss and grief. There was a few years ago, there was a man who wrote his doctoral thesis on American megachurches and succession. And it was very, I've read it, I have to confess, and it was very interesting that the thing that seemed to blindside these megachurch leaders in moving on was this sense of grief that came to them with this handover, you know. And you think, yeah, if you've done this for the last 20, 30 years and your relationships are here, it's a loss, you know. So there's that humanity to kind of figure into all of this as well. So, for example, as part of our Dove succession, we have Keith Yoder and others who we've designated you're there pastorally for Larry and Laverne and everyone involved because, you know, we need that kind of care. I'll mention just a few things about the outgoing leader and the incoming leader. This is when someone's been identified and just kind of working together and how the exiting leader, should we say, can help work with them. And Steve mentioned, starts to take us into this area as well, because to reiterate what he says, the leader who is moving on, you have so much knowledge about so many things, and often you just don't know how much you know. It's just second nature to you. You know, an issue happens. Well, you know who to go to in the church. You need advice on this. You know who to go to, how to fix this. And experience seems to be that a lot of leaders can't quite articulate that knowledge themselves. So I came across something called GKI, Generative Knowledge Interviewing. And basically, you sit down with the exiting leader and you interview them for as long as it takes and ask them every question you can think of to get down in writing how you deal with that. And Larry, and I said this to Larry, and Larry's like, oh, please do that. I don't know how to go about writing all this down, you know, after 40 years. So that's what we've done here in Dove. I actually got together at least a couple of times with Larry on his own and then Larry and Laverne, and we just fired questions at them. And I think the knowledge, I've got down here three areas of knowledge the exiting leader may have that should be passed on. One is just facts. You know, the new leader will just need to know things. How does this work in the church? Or who operates this? You know, all kinds of levels. But also, it's kind of like facts about, well, who do you go to? And I remember asking Larry, okay, if there's a real issue or crisis in that, who do you ask to pray? And, you know, there are people that they go to who they know are confidential intercessors and really take things to God in prayer. Like, if there's a real, like, financial issue or crisis, who do you go to? Mm-hmm. You know, for advice on finances and budgets, who can speak into that area? You know, within the church or maybe outside, you know, outside kind of people, consultants. And if you think of it, you as a leader will have all kinds of knowledge like that. You just know what to do or who to go to or where to find the information or where to get the advice. So that can be helpful. And again, so we've gone through this whole thing. It's called generative knowledge interviewing. And we came in the end, I think we've made about 12 pages of notes of, you know, how Larry and Laverne handled this. Because at some point, Larry and Laverne may not be around to ask. I mean, that's what we're looking to the future, you know. What happens? And what kind of history, as Steve says, and knowledge and advice is there that we want to document? The future leader can turn to those things and say, ah, well, they used to do it this way. Maybe I can try that way. I think the second thing to impart, obviously, is skills. And we all know this about training people, but if you've identified someone and is coming in, are there some skills that would be really nice for them to grow in first before they actually take on the leadership, you know, responsibility? And of course, everyone's different, and you know that. Maybe that you've identified someone who's, you know, is the next leader, but you feel like they need a bit more help with preaching sermons or, you know, just compassionate ministry for those in the church who are, you know, sick or whatever it would be. Or how to engage with the community, or you see that they're great at this and this, but they really don't seem to have any interest in children's ministry. Well, how can you just help shape them that they, you know, can engage with that issue? Maybe they don't, it's not really their thing, but how can they honor children's workers? So just to be mindful of that, there could be skills, even though you know this, the person for the role, that you may just want to help develop and train, and as Jesus did, do things with them, observe them, give them feedback. Yeah, that's how we all learn, isn't it? Just in the last days, I was teaching a class somewhere, and the director of the institute sat in to watch what I was doing and writing her comments, and she said, you know, you'll get the form and whatever, and that's good, you know. We all need to be evaluated. So just take on that role seriously. Do you see any skill lack? And of course it could be they need to read some books. It could be they need to go into a class or a course or something. But be mindful of passing on knowledge, skills. And this is one that often gets overlooked. Relationships. You have all kinds of relationships. It could be beneficial for your successor also to have.
Is that number three?
Yes, that's number three, sorry, yes. So one is facts, two is skill development, and three is relationships. And that could be inside your organization, a church, or outside. So again, you know, whatever their position or title, who's the real intercessor around here, you know? Who do you go for financial advice? But also outside, you know, in the community, who in your local, you know, ministerium, who in your other church networks, who does your successor need to know? Who's the person who opened doors around here in other churches, in other ministries? It could be civic leaders. You know, maybe you have a relationship with your local mayor or police or, you know, social workers you've interacted with on different issues. Well, the new person coming in, it'd be good for them to know that and take them along, introduce them. You know, this is so-and-so. In 6 months' time, they're taking over from me. I want you to know each other, and, you know. So you will have a wealth of relational resources that you also want to bring people into. Yes, they're going to develop their own relationship with them and others, but you know, sometimes people just walk away and there are these community relationships that get lost. So really, part of the training and preparation is passing on what you know, and you often don't know what you know. So if you can't get it down yourself, you know, have someone ask you all the questions. In fact, I mean, we don't have it published. I mean, I can probably take and send you 40 questions that we asked Larry and Laverne, if that helps you, you know, start to think about these things and the kinds of information you might have. So tacit knowledge needs to be brought out and made available as a resource for the future, maybe when it's not so easy to pick up the phone and call you. So we think that's an important part as well. Steve, I'll let you finish off the fourth section before we get to some questions and discussion.
Moses spent time helping Joshua be prepared for his ministry, Elijah to Elisha, just as Peter was saying, Barnabas and Paul, and all those relationships. They weren't just biblical events that the writers wrote about. These were actual transitions of leadership. And I've loved reading the Old Testament, and I've been reading, you know, the Kings and some of these other books, like, well, you know, this king followed the Lord as their father did, this one didn't, you know, and seeing that transition, yet, and they were still in authority, you know, like they were still there. So one of the things I think that is really helpful within the Dove family is apostolic oversight for our churches. And those are persons that are able to be brought in even more so during this season. And I can remember sitting with a leader. It was probably two and a half years before they were ever going to transition. But the Lord was speaking to him about it and to his wife. And it was very early in the stage of this happening, and they were not they were too young to kind of go into retirement. They weren't going into, you know, they still had to do other work to support their family. And so it was a little bit different, kind of a unique one. But I love the fact that they brought me in that early, because they had a sounding board outside of someone themselves whom they could trust, whom they could say things to that didn't hold them, their feet to the fire in concrete, as a team might do initially and react to this formulating decision. Let's say it that way. So then with that, those guys and myself, which they felt very clear this is what was happening, we were able to formulate a timeline, just a timeline. And that was the most simple thing that we could do initially together of, you know, when should this happen? When should you communicate to your team? By when do we need to identify this person who's going to replace you? And they had an idea of that person already. And in the end, that wasn't the person, which was an interesting thing that happened through the process. So apostolic leaders steer the ship. The handbook actually says they're there to protect, correct, direct. They can often see things, having stepped outside of your system, that maybe the leaders within the system don't see. Another thing that I found in giving apostolic oversight to a church that's transitioning, if those church people, the congregational people and the eldership team people knew you as the apostolic leader and knew your heart, knew your messages, and knew what you do for their leaders, there is this immediate trust that, okay, someone is working with our leader, someone outside of us is helping us with this process. And that brings a lot of reassurance to the people. That brings a lot of security to them. And I've had lead elders' children say to their parents, "Is Steve involved?" And then they go, "Oh, okay." And it's not Steve. It's that my dad has somebody that's watching out for him. My dad and mom have someone that's protecting them in this process. The Dove Handbook says this, actually: facilitate the appointment and transition of partner church lead elders and eldership. So it's actually right in there within our role or job description. So practically, that all begins with the lead elder and, of course, the lead elder's spouse, with them being in agreement. So all of this is discussed, all of this is prioritized, all of this is put into a timeline. And the interesting thing I've find in working with several of these is that the one succeeding and the one coming in, they often all, within this Dove system anyways, we try to raise up within, of course, as sons and daughters of the house. We've often tried to do that. On rare occasions we haven't done that, but most of the times we've done that. So therefore they know each other, they trust each other. But that also can be an inhibitor, in that because they know and they trust each other, they can't ask all of the hard questions, or they don't know what all the hard questions are to ask. And that's where the overseer can come in and help them with those questions and say, well, to the one succeeding, have you asked your leaders this? You know, have you forced them to communicate to you about that? And that help is really helpful to them. One of the things that's talked about in the book Managing Transitions, and in your handout we're going to give you these resource, the how to find these resources. That book was written by Bill Bridges, and he said this. He said that two areas are of high concern to everyone who will experience the transitioning of key leaders. And he said those two things are: how present is care and concern? And that sounds really, really simple, but how present is care and concern? So care and concern of the leader transitioning, care and concern of the ones coming in, care and concern of the families, care and concern of the present leadership team, care and concern of the congregation. All of those pieces, he relates it to care and concern, so that losses, as you provide care and concern, losses are minimized. And I like that thought. In other words, the more we understand about this process, the more educated we are on it, the more we're on the side of this process in agreement with it, and the more we're asking questions and getting timelines and people are happy with the process, we minimize the losses. And the more apostolically people are involved, the more security brought to that congregation continues to minimize the losses. So do we need, let me just close with a couple of things. Do we need outside advisors outside of maybe your apostolic overseer? Well, typically in something as large as Dove International in Succession, you better have a pretty large team helping with this process. In a smaller church, I'm not sure you need to have outside advisors. You may want that. I don't know that it's necessary. But if you have a church of multiple staff, I would say it becomes more and more necessary to have the input of two or three other outside advisors. But here's something that's very important. You have to determine the authority that's carried. Okay? So you can't, if the outside advisors, their role is not an authoritative role, but rather it's an input advice-giving role, then they give you the input, they give you the advice, and the role of the persons who have the authority to make the decision. But you're grateful for all of those outside counselors and input that they can give you. So one thing that's got to be very, very clear, if you have advisors outside of yourself, is what authority, if any, do they carry? What decisions can they actually make? Or are they just presenting to you their findings and their input and providing, you know, boundaries and cautionary aspects for you? So a team of persons can be helpful. So whether a group is formed or not, I believe that clear decision-making can be made. I believe that apostolic leaders who are even living a distance from you can still be very helpful today in Zoom meetings, in email. I remember with one leader in particular, as we were talking about timelines, he wasn't the best at communicating timelines, so I took the responsibility of that and made sure that, okay, we're 9 months out. Here's what we should be doing. Okay, we're 6 months out. Here's where we are. Here's who we're communicating with now. All right, we're 3 months out, all right? And now we're working on the ceremony, you know, and all of those things. So it's very helpful you have someone that's able to communicate that. Now, we're going to give to you one of these, but I want to also point out there's some appendices that are in the back that are really helpful, but there's also an Appendix 6, which is resources. And that gives you a couple of books that we recommend, including the next book. But there's also two YouTubes or podcasts. I think they're podcasts that we really would encourage you to listen to. And you'll find that in number 2 and number 3. One's called Change is Easy, Transition is Hard. And the other one is called Navigating the Neutral Zone. Both of those are excellent podcasts. And we found them as a team helping with Larry and Laverne in this transition, Merle and Cherie, both of them to be extremely helpful. Of course, Peter, the book he mentioned is here. Henry Cloud has a book called Necessary Endings, The Employee's Business and Relationships that all of us have to give up in order to move forward. And William Bridges, the one I mentioned, Managing Transitions, and, of course, the Vanderbilt book next. All right, so that's just a little encapsulation of what you'll find in here. And we want you each to have one of these. But just as Peter said, bear in mind, this is only a draft edition. We hope to have additional information in this. And then eventually, we hope to put it into just a little booklet that will be a resource for you.
I think, too, we're hoping that's going to be available within a couple of months. So we're not talking about too far into the
right
future. So just bear with us on that. We need to get very
good.
Thanks. So is this time for questions? I mean, we're not standing here as experts, discussion points, you know, things you want to talk about.
Or a comment, knowledge that you have that you want to pass on. By the way, since you're getting this, and as you read it, if you have input for us with this document, next it goes to the International Apostolic Council, and they read it and give us their input. But if you have input for this for us, Yeah, just email Peter or myself at the DevOps. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear whatever input that you might have, or say, you know, Steve, Peter, you missed this, or you could be stronger in that, or, you know, here's a question I have, but it doesn't seem to address it. Just let us know, because we'd love that.
Absolutely.
We'd love that feedback.
It's not finalized yet. So, yeah. So, observations or discussion points or questions. And if you want to ask us questions about what we've actually been doing in terms of the whole Dove International thing, we're free to kind of, you know, spill the beans and tell you the kind of things that we've been doing, if that would be helpful. And sure, I mean, in our case within Dove, I mean, it's taken us a while because we wanted to process, we wanted to communicate and honor people who really needed to, you know, have a chance to get used to the idea and give input, because we're trying to move together, aren't we, and not just have something imposed. So, and that in itself can take a while, especially if you're a large international movement, you know.
The other thing we found, I think, along the way, Peter, is you have very early adopters or quick adapters, you know, and you have those that are very late and they take a long time. Mm. And I for years have heard myself have been asked the question, but as I travel, what are you guys doing about succession? Who's taking, you know, Larry's getting older. What are you guys doing? And we kept trying to reassure them, yes, we're praying, we're asking God, don't be worried. The International Apostolic Council is working on that. He couldn't give much information because I didn't really have a lot of information to give other than, yeah, we're working on it. We realize that. We're working on it. But the funny thing is that once it was announced, in so many of those people's minds, it was done. Mm-hmm. And we even had to say here, no, this doesn't actually happen now until April 2024. Yeah. Because in most people's minds, Merle's the leader. They've already transitioned.
The early adopters.
Yeah, they have already transitioned. Yeah. Others are grieving. Like, they'll still be grieving, you know, 5 years after April 24. So.
Well, if I can just come off the back of that, I think the process in November, it was the Dove Europe leaders meeting in Sofia in Bulgaria, and I was there, and Ron was there, and Larry was there, and we took Merle along he'd never been in Bulgaria, to introduce him to the people in our churches in Bulgaria, and it was fascinating just to be in this room. And these Bulgarians, I mean, very appropriately, boy, did they have questions for Merle. You know, I mean, they were like, it was no bad spiritual. They were like, Merle, okay, you said that you believe God's, you know, asked you to take this on. Tell us, what does that look like? How do you know it's God? You know, and it was wonderful. I mean, they were so engaged. This is just average, you know, congregational members in another country in Eastern Europe. And they wanted that opportunity to hear and almost be part of the process. They just didn't want to be presented. They were happy with it, but they wanted to know. And they were so engaged. And the questions were, in some ways, they were blunt, but they were very good-spirited. And it was just awesome to think, well, I'm glad we're doing this. Okay, here are some people in a nation who just want to ask questions and be reassured. And it was just a wonderful experience. And that just made me think, wow, it's worth taking time to introduce the new people and just give a chance for people to ask their questions and get honest answers.
I guess on that point, I'm sitting here thinking, as an elder in our congregation, one of the things we have to go back to and make sure that we say in front of every one of the people is, there is transition coming. This is what it looks like. If you don't know about it already, here's what it is. Mm-hmm. And I think we'll find that probably 90% of the people might even know what they, you mm-hmm. know.
Yeah.
If they haven't been in congregations like Newport or you know, mm-hmm. whatever, it's not in the forefront of their thing unless their leaders are already actively involved.
Sure. Yeah, so just for the tape, the comment was that as elders, as leaders, we need to be sure to be going back to our congregations and letting people know what's going on. And if I could comment to that, is you have different levels of congregational persons. You have the persons in your congregation that are only concerned about your family in your congregation. And everything else that happens out there, that's nice, but as long as we're happy here, You know, it won't have a lot of meaning. You have a few people with leaders in those that are very interested in that and really want to know where's Dove going and, you know, next generation stuff. So it's all very different, but it's all very important to communicate what you can communicate. It's excellent to do that.
I would have an observation that was, I'll never forget this. I was serving as an associate pastor on staff with a former senior pastor, and we went through a year-long process of discernment and naming the new senior pastor. And as soon as I was named the new senior pastor, the very next staff meeting, I remember an issue came up, and a decision needed to be made about the issue. And immediately, every head turned to me. And I distinctly remember the moment thinking, wait a minute, I'm not the senior pastor here. So it made an impact on me. I don't know if it did on the former senior pastor. He was like, wait, you know, I don't know how he felt about it, but I know it really made an impact on me. So I think the comment on that is, as soon as something like that is announced, people's minds, their hearts start to shift really quickly. And just to be prepare the incoming and the outgoing for the reality of that.
Yeah. And I think, too, with that, Daryl, this clear communication as to timelines, things like, no, this person is the leader right now. And, you know, all of that just has to happen, you know, along the way, because people, will be shifting all over the place. So back to good, clear communication and authority lines, that kind of thing.
But even here, you realize, if you don't know anything about this and you're watching what's happening up front, your antennas are already picking up. There's a change here. There's a transition coming. There's some younger guys up there. It's people are smart and they can figure it out. So, that's why I think early communication is good. You know, like once you know that you know, the earlier you can communicate it, within reason.
Yeah.
So here, because of the size of this organization, early was several years. In a smaller congregation, a smaller church, early might be a year, you know, or a year and a half. I don't know. It just depends. So. All right. Well, thank you guys for coming today. Everybody's got the handout. And
just one quick question.
Okay.
I think we need to understand that it's okay to have some degree of deliberation as the outgoing person to make that. For example, we may have decided, you know, we've poured enough of our life in, and maybe we, what did Simon say, 10 years, 18 hours a day, whatever, and now we just want to go, oh, that's about our kitchen gardens and relax. And then you come and you hear today that Caleb at 85 chose to take on the hardest part of the job for the promised land. So, you know, sometimes we can go, well, God, did you really give me the release to go off? I mean, we'll always, as believers of Christ, we always will be that, but we may not take on the same degree of a role that we did when we were in that position.
And it's always a process. It's not just one thing. There's, you know, these successions and transitions, there is a process of communication and deliberation, of course.
We've talked about that, Steve. You know, and this is a question that's come up with a lot of leaders and a lot of people. What will be Larry and Laverne's role? Because they're not moving to Florida. They're not leaving the country. And so if you're a lead elder and you're moving on from lead eldering, but you're staying in the congregation, which, you know, denominations tell you not to do that. But if you are, then what is your role? And how will you be cared for? And how will you be communicated with? How will you be asked to speak? You know, are you going to be dead weight somewhere in the corner of the building? You know, so all of those are very important topics to talk about. We talked a little bit about in this publication as well.
I'm only mentioning even a conference like for some people who might come here who are in that place who might think, well, okay, we move over here. They may have heard something at this very conference that caused them to say, well, God, are you really done with me yet? Because a lot of this stuff we've heard is just pressing on.